Okay, councillors, we are going to kick off. First of all, we are still waiting on our representatives from CCMS, but rather than delay any longer, because I appreciate that we've been here most of the day and people want to get home at some stage, we are just going to kick off. First of all, have we any apologies that we want recorded? Councillor Curran, Councillor David Taylor, Councillor Michael Savage, and Councillor Andrews, Naomi, yeah. Billy Walker, okay. Davy Highland, Councillor McMurray, did you want to sort of come in just with anything?
Sorry, just wanted to declare an interest that I'm an employee of the EA, directly in the youth section, so just wanted to declare that, thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Councillor O'Murray?
Yeah, I'd probably declare as well. I'm a teacher, I'm working in a CCMS school, and be a
Will not hold it against you.
As well.
Okay. Councillor Casey?
Been a member of three Board of Governors, is that mean a conflict of interest?
No, we'll not hold that against you either. No, he's definitely not a teacher. No better man, isn't that right, Charlie? Anyway, to my right here, we have Mr. Gavin Boyd, and Gavin and a couple of his colleagues came to meet us a number of months ago after we had passed a motion at council, where he met with the party representatives to bring us up to speed on a number of issues. So I'm delighted to welcome him back here tonight, and I'm just going to hand immediately over to Gavin, and he can talk us through his presentation, and then we'll open the floor to questions.
Chair, thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I wish I had a cheerier presentation to give you, but it's fair to say right at the outset, this probably, in the old days it would have been X-rated, it probably is 18 certificate. This is grim. The financial outlook facing education at the minute is absolutely grim. I am very worried, not just about the financial outlook, but I'm very worried about the impact that this is currently having on everybody involved in the education system. Those folk who work in the system, teachers, principals, governors, who've got the responsibility of trying to balance the books in their individual schools. But I'm also worried about the impact that this could well have on the quality of education and the quality of support services that we deliver to our young people. The Education Authority is the funding authority for all schools in the system, so we have a unique oversight into the finances in every school. We are also the provider of support services in virtually every case for schools. So we have a very wide reach, as I say, what I will try to do is give you my overview of where we are currently, where we're headed to in the next short while, and what the options are that are available to us. You will have seen a fair amount of commentary, particularly from school principals over the last 12 months. And school principals, those people right at the very sharp end, concerned about what was happening to their school budgets, concerned about, in many cases, having to go to parents and ask them for funding for what we would consider to be very basic services in schools. I don't know if you saw an interview last week on TV, I was very concerned with the interview of a principal from McGabbery Primary School. And that's a school that's doing well. We've just increased the numbers in McGabbery. The school is full. The classes are full. The average class size is well over 30. But the principal can't balance the books. And he made the point that not only could he balance the books, but he was worried sick about this. He wasn't sleeping, and it was impacting on his health. This is very serious when we've got to this stage. When we try to understand, and part of this presentation is to try and explain why we are where we are and what the options are going forward. When we look at the antecedents of our current issues, we trace this back to 2010-2011. The graph that you see in front of you demonstrates the lower line is the education budget that we have today and have had each year since 2010-11. The upper line is what the budget would have been if it had been increased by inflation. What this clearly demonstrates is that from 2010-11, the budget in education for Northern Ireland as a whole has been squeezed in real terms. The gap is something of the order of £200 million. So as we sit here today with a budget of around about £1.9 billion, that's £200 million less than we would have had had our budget been increased by inflation over the period. I'm not making a political point, but the fact is that the different approach to budgets coincided with the election of a new government in Westminster with a very clear mandate to reduce public expenditure, and this is what the outworking of that is. So over that period from 10-11, we've seen a very significant reduction in real terms funding. I just want to make a general point, because sometimes you will hear it being said publicly that too much money is spent on administration, not enough money goes to the front line, and by comparison with other places, typically England, we spend significantly less money in our schools. It's a false comparison because the budgets are structured differently. About 62-63% of the education budget goes directly to schools. So that means there's about 38%, 37% that we manage from the centre. But those services that we manage from the centre include, for example, support for special educational needs. This year we will spend almost £250 million supporting children with special educational needs. That includes £105-106 million running special schools. It includes £80-90 million supporting children in mainstream, and then the balance is other support services. So we fund that directly from the centre, but it's all done in support of children. The second biggest area of the budget that we manage from the centre is around transport. So we spend about £75 million a year providing free home-to-school transport for children. It's a very, very significant amount of money. We do have some questions about that amount of money, but it is spent directly in support of children. I could summarise the situation by saying, in the Education Authority, we spend less than 2% of the total budget on administration. And when I'm talking about administration, I'm talking about the sort of administration that pays the wages, pays the bills for contractors, manages the service. We've done some benchmarking across the public sector, and in fact we spend less money on administration and education than any other aspect of public service in Northern Ireland. So I've talked about there being a real terms reduction of about 10% in the education budget as a whole. This graph looks at school budgets over the same period, and it's designed in exactly the same way. The upper line is what the budgets to schools would have been had they increased in line with inflation. The lower line is what they've actually got. Now, in this case, I'm looking only at Catholic-maintained schools and controlled schools. So I'm ignoring, for the purpose of this presentation, voluntary grammar schools and grant-maintained integrated schools. But the picture is exactly the same. The gap is slightly different because successive ministers for education have attempted to protect schools. So whereas the education budget as a whole has declined by 10% in real terms, schools budgets have declined by slightly less than that, only marginally less than that. But in fact, Catholic maintained schools and controlled schools will have something of the order of £90 million less in real terms this year than they would have had they had their budgets increased by inflation. And this is at a time when pupil numbers are actually increasing marginally. So pupil numbers are up 2% from 2012-2013. You will know from your own experience that's not a uniform increase. There are hot spots. There are places where pupil numbers are going up quite significantly. There are other places where the school-age population is going down. But numbers are going up. That's why particularly primary school principals were saying this year, hold on, the amount of money that I'm getting per child is actually less than it was last year.
That's right.
Because it was the same amount of money, but it was divided by more children.
That's right.
And the other thing that I'm highlighting here is that the principal cost, the main cost in schools, is staffing. And this graph identifies the number of full-time equivalent teachers in our system. We've got about 18,500 full-time equivalent teachers. We've got about 20,000 teachers. But when we take account of the part-time teachers, it's about 18,500 full-time equivalent teachers. And it's pretty much flat. It's pretty much the same number that we had 3 or 4 years ago. So the point that I'm making here is that schools have seen their budgets come down in real terms, but the real drivers for cost, the number of pupils they have, and really importantly, the number of teachers that they have stayed broadly the same or are increasing slightly in the same period. So why has it really only started to bite over the last couple of years? Because the pressure has been on since 2010-11. The financial pressure has been tightening steadily since 2010-11. Why has it really only started to bite in the last 18 months? Why have you only started to hear about it from school principals in particular over the last 18 months, and particularly the last year? Well, this graph shows the actual expenditure in schools as against their income. Because actually, we've come out of a period when education was fairly well funded and schools were well funded. They were actually bringing in more money than they were spending. And I'll show you that in a bit more detail in a second. But the key point about this graph is in the blue line is a school's income, the orange line or the red line is school's expenditure, and you'll see that line, those lines crossed, and they crossed during the 15-16 year. The lines crossed, so now schools as a whole are spending more money than they're getting in. Let me explain that in a little bit more detail. This graph really interests me because this looks at the schools in surplus and the schools in deficit. We devolve the management of schools' budgets to individual schools, and you'll see in about 2010-11, the vast majority of schools were sitting in surplus. 853 schools sitting in surplus, 211 schools sitting in deficit. The schools in surplus, the total surplus in those schools was over £50 million. This is money that had been allocated but not spent in years gone by. And what has happened over the last few years is as the financial pressures have really started to bite, the number of schools in surplus and the total value of that surplus has declined, but you can see the number of schools in deficit and the total value of the deficit has really started to rocket. So that this year, we expect, this year, 2017-18, we expect 444 schools to end the year in deficit, and we expect the total deficit in those schools to be over £50 million. For the first time, the total deficits, the accumulated deficits in schools, will exceed the surpluses in other schools. In other circumstances, I've said, that really means that the school system is bust. Not quite like that, but the deficits, for the first time ever, will exceed the surpluses. When I look at the centre funds that we manage in support of children that the Education Authority manages, it's the same picture as you've seen in other graphs. So in real terms, the budget has declined. But our particular problem is not only has it declined in real terms, it has declined in cash terms. So we have less cash to manage those central services this year than we had in 2010-11. That is particularly challenging for us given the increased demand that we see for those centrally managed services. And in particular, I mentioned earlier special educational needs. The demand for special educational needs that we see coming forward is increasing steadily. This graph shows on the one hand, the total amount of money that we spend in support of children with special educational needs, that's the red line, and the blue line just beneath that is the number of statements of special educational needs that we have in the system. So the number of statements has been increasing steadily. Those are children who are identified as having very particular needs, and we provide additional support for those children. The amount of money that we're spending to support those children is increasing. This year, as I said, in 2017-18, it's going to be closer to 230 £50 million. So we're spending additional money at a time when we have less money, so that puts real pressure everywhere else on the budget. And it's also fair to say that this is the most frustrating aspect of our activity, because although we are not restricting the amount of money that we're spending more money, and we can demonstrate that, we are failing to meet the needs that principals are articulating to us. So despite the fact that we're increasing expenditure by 6 or 7% per annum, we have more children coming into the system as being identified with additional needs, and we're not meeting the demands that are putting forward to us. This slide is now redundant, and I will update you with what the current situation is. But this was the slide that I used at the end of some presentations that I gave to school principals before Christmas. And it was based on the planning model that Treasury gave us, which was that our budget would be cash flat over the next 2 years. So we would get the same amount of cash as we got this year. The Education Authority, on the basis of its initial allocation for 17-18, will overspend this budget by approximately £60 million. That £60 million is largely made up of covering school deficits of something of the order of £23-24 million, because we've got it covered at the centre, and increased expenditure on special educational needs of £20-odd million. So that's unfunded, so we will exceed the budget this year by £60 million. I'm very hopeful that this year's shortfall will be balanced out from other allocations to education and other departments. This graph said that if we don't get an increase in our budget, our costs are going up. Our costs are going up because there are increased demands in the system and because there are inflationary pressures. So what we were saying in this presentation is in 2 years' time, the shortfall in the system, the shortfall in the education system, will be of the order of 300, rising towards £350 million. Now, I've amended the figures on the basis of the Department of Finance briefing document that you may be familiar with, the briefing document the Department of Finance sent out before Christmas. And they said that one of their key assumptions in that document was that education expenditure and health expenditure would be protected. And like many Department of Finance documents, many of the figures included in there are true. But one of the things that they said was they speculated there'd be a 3.5% increase in the education budget for 18-19. That'll be 3.5% of an increase by comparison with the budget for 17-18. But it was the budget for 17-18. I've already said that we're going to exceed that budget by £60 million. And in fact, there was an additional allocation to education of £30 million that was not taken account of by the Department of Finance. So the 3.5% uplift that the Department of Finance is speculating on in their budget briefing would actually be about a £25 million reduction on the actual expenditure on education in the current year. What that means is that the Department of Education and ourselves are estimating a pressure this year, this coming year, 18-19, of about £150 million, rising to something in excess of £200 million in 1920. This is clearly, absolutely unsustainable. Unsustainable. There are only two solutions available to us. We either get additional money, and it is a huge amount of additional money, £150 million probably this coming year, and well in excess of £200 million the year after. We either get a shed load of additional money, or we take a fundamental look at the shape of our education system, what we do and how we do it. And we're saying quite clearly that we need, as a community, we need to decide what it is we want out of our education system, how we want to structure that education system. And once we've decided what we want out of the system, we then, as a community, must decide how we're going to fund that system. Because what I'm saying to you very clearly today is we simply do not have enough money to run the system as it is currently configured. It is not possible. Chair, I think I've cheered you up enough at this stage, and I'm very happy to stop and invite any questions that members might have.
I'm delighted you're stopping. Okay, Gavin, listen, thank you for that presentation. I'm just going to hand it over to the floor now for Councillor Stevie. Your light is first on.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation, Gavin. Gavin, I want to refer you to the budget plans for schools. I think there are 3-year budget plans that were asked to submit recently, and a letter that was sent out to the schools on the 22nd of January 2018. The schools need clarity on whether that they can access the carried surplus that you talked about in your presentation. The letter suggests possibly no, but it's for the schools to make the budgets work. So the budgets that they put through are financially planned, they're sound, they're good, but they rely on that surplus. Can you tell us if that is the case, and was the department aware that these letters were going out, or was it done from the board level? The schools who have accumulated surpluses, their budget plans were turned down, from what they can see, on the basis that they're looking to use that surplus. But well, the whole budget was planned to do that, and they knew that. And as far as they're concerned, it's good governance. They went about things the right way, and now they've been left in complete limbo. So could we get an answer to that sort of very precise question?
Yes, that's the answer. Yes, they can. But that only became clear last Monday. Let me explain. The Education Authority is allocated the funding for schools in any given year. So we don't have additional money to allow schools to draw down surpluses. That has to come from the centre. It has always come from the centre up until January of last year, because it comes out of the January monitoring round, and there was no January monitoring round, so there was no funding last year for it. This year, we advised schools that they should not plan on the basis of having access to that surplus until we had access to it. But many schools did. But it was only the letter was unfortunately worded and has been misinterpreted in some quarters. We only knew that surplus money was available when we got a letter from the department, actually last Monday, as it turns out. So one of the things that the guys in the office have been working out the last couple of days is a letter to go out to schools to assure them that surplus monies are available to them. There is one caveat, and the caveat is we've got an allocation of £8 million from the department. When schools drew up their original plans in the summertime, they were suggesting to us that they wanted to draw down £15 million. Now, we've taken the view that there's surplus money available, so therefore it is available to schools. So the answer to your question is, yes, they can draw it down, and they will get a letter in the next couple of days just to make that clear. Well, the caveat is we'll not know exactly how to balance the books until we get to the end of March, but we're telling schools that what the letter will say to them is, guys, there's surplus money available, but we are asking you not to be profligate. We're asking you to be careful with what you do with it. Without commenting on each individual school, I expect those schools to get letters in the next short while saying their plans have been approved.
Okay, Councillor Riley.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're very welcome, Mr. Boyd. I'll be parochial in my comment because I'm from Kilkeel, and we have an exceptionally good, high quality, aspirational school there in Kilkeel High School. And increasing numbers year on year. And a number of years ago, we were advised that Kilkeel was number 7 on the national list within Northern Ireland for a replacement school. And unfortunately, that seemed to slip during Mr. O'Dowd's tenure as minister. And it's not on the list now at all. And certainly I would see that as very unfortunate, because you know the school is very, very dated now. Just last week, they had 2 days lost in cold weather because the heating system shut down, and you know, it's not serviceable at times. So I think we, if you look around all the other schools in this area, you know, we have absolutely fabulous schools, especially within the maintained sector. And I think it's time now that the control sector did get a fair crack at the whip, and schools like Kilkeel get replacement status. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor. Councillor O'Murray.
Yeah, thank you, Marion. Gavin, very insightful view. It's a view being repeated in schools across the district, surely. Just to give members an idea of how this is played out then in a primary school, you said that from 2010-2011 year, budgets have remained approximately the same, in the round the same. Our principal would say that in 2010 we had 43 children come into our primary school, and this year coming in with 84 children coming in, that's across Irish medium and English medium, 84 children coming into year one next year. He reports back to us that there's no double of the budget. You know, there's double of the amount of children coming in, but there's no double of the budget. Our school is growing beyond its capacity. It's bursting at the seams. There's extra temporary classrooms being put in all over the place. This is repeated in other primary schools across the district, of course. There's been a redundancy in the last 3 years. The four teachers have gone on to temporary variations of their contract because the school couldn't afford to keep going with the levels of staff that we had. We've had to get rid of special needs assistants. I'm also the SENCO in the school, so I work quite closely with the Education Authority Special Needs Service, who are very good. There's some excellent staff in it and very helpful in that. In the last couple of years, when we would have been trying to get children onto the statementing process, we would have used terms like global developmental delay. We would have talked about a range of problems to describe a range of problems. That's been scrapped. That's been done away with. The idea of a child having global developmental delay, we were told, wasn't acceptable anymore in the statement process. The most common type of child that we were referring along for the statement process were children with specific literacy difficulties. So we were accessing the specific literacy difficulty service, which is excellent, which is very good. The paraphernalia teachers that were coming out were saying, I can't get this child to the level that the school would expect the child to be at, so I think you should pass the child on to the education psychologist and move them on for statutory assessment. We've been told now this year, this school year, by the education psychologist that we can't refer a child for specific literacy difficulties. So we have to be more creative now in how we go about things. The education authority can't always provide financial assistance for children, say, in nursery. So we're finding ourselves in a situation where the principal is needing to use some of the school budget to employ special needs assistance in the nursery, which is then taking away a bit on up the school. And it's, you know, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. You're taking someone out of Key Stage 2 to go down into the nursery to try and... I've no doubt, and I listen to you, and it's, the money is being spent. The money is there, and the money is being spent in the right places. It is being spent in the right places. But as you say yourself, there's not enough money. There's more places now than there was 6 and 7 years ago. And if my principal was here now, he'd be saying the whole thing's bust. The whole thing is going to bust. You know, schools are going to bust. Henry's talking about new builds. I don't know what percentage of schools would need new builds, but most schools, any schools that have been growing exponentially in the last 5 or 6 years, are growing beyond their means. I was glad to hear Stevie ask about additional money being available and about schools running the surplus that would possibly have the plans approved. That'll be, I'm sure, some relief to principals.
Okay, thank you very much.
If I can pick up a couple of themes. First of all, one of the impacts of the budget pressures is that this year, for example, we will spend about £16 million on maintenance in schools. Last year, we spent £29 million. on maintenance. The maintenance budget has been cut, and there's an inevitable consequence of this. It's relatively easy to cut a maintenance budget for a year or two, but principals are telling me that in many cases their schools have never been in poorer condition, and we're simply not spending enough money on maintaining the schools that we have. In relation to children with special educational needs and schools doing their best, I should point out that the Education Authority is effectively the banker for control schools and Catholic-maintained schools. But there are other schools for which we're not the banker. They simply get their money every year. And I had a long conversation with the principal of a grant-maintained integrated primary school recently, and he was telling me about the number of extra things that the school was doing out of its budget to provide for children who had particular needs. A new family had moved into the district. They had two autistic children. The school was providing support. But the school has run out of money, and the bank manager isn't going to lend them any money. So the conversation I had with that principal was, everything that you do, that you're doing for those children is right. You're doing all the right things, but you can't afford to do it. And we have had the situation in the last couple of years where a school has gone bust, where it was a voluntary grammar school in Belfast. It ran out of money, and it had to be taken over by the state. So what I'm taking out of what you're saying, Councillor, is there are real pressures out there. The system is still trying to manage the best that it can in individual schools. I'm not seeking to justify the current situation. All I'm seeking to do is explain why it's happening. I'm not justifying this. And I am saying if we don't deal with these issues now, there are going to be real problems. I go to so many primary schools where the class size is now over 30. The average class size is over 30. One school I was in the other day, 34. And yet, the average pupil-teacher ratio across the primary sector in our system is 18. One teacher for every 18 pupils. So if I'm looking at a lot of schools where the class size is 31, 32, 33, 34, that's telling me that we have far, far, far too many schools where there is one teacher for every 9 pupils or one teacher for every 8 pupils. We simply can't afford to do that.
Okay, Gavin, thank you. Councillor Enright?
Whilst I would agree that the countercyclical cutbacks in money coming from Westminster is at the root of a lot of our financial troubles, forcing year-on-year reductions on all public services in Northern Ireland, there are some significant things that you in the Department of Education are not doing, ways in which you're managing your resources properly. Given the fact that we have several different sectors in Northern Ireland, Catholic sector, the state sector, integrated sector, Irish medium sector, it's essential with each of these sectors we manage our resources properly and rationally use our assets. And it seems to me the department hasn't been doing that. And I can give you several examples of that. Here in Downpatrick, the Catholic Church wants to consolidate its 3 secondary schools onto one campus in the Red High, an excellent site, the new school up in the Red High. We're proposing currently moving the Green High up to the new site on the Coyle River, but we know that the Blackwater essentially acts as a secondary modern for the Green High. And clearly, we need 2 single campuses of a high, very high level in Downpatrick to look after secondary education in this town. Instead, we've got 5 different campuses, simply because the department won't take the bull by the horns and get rid of the duplication that results from the 11 plus. Worse than that, the department wastes, and I've done some research on this now because I took you to court on the issue. The department wastes about £18 million a year busing people away from their nearest grammar school to schools like Methody or Victoria in Belfast. When you've got perfectly good grammar schools here in Downpatrick, you don't need to bus people anywhere. In England and Wales, you get bused to your nearest school in type. And you're wasting almost £20 million a year but busing people to distant schools where those schools exist in their own areas. These are your own figures, incidentally. I also remember how you took time out to pay barristers to take me and my school to the High Court because you maintained that Irish language education was merely an aspirational part of a 1998 agreement. So you wasted taxpayers' money trying to prove that we didn't need transport in the Irish language sector because the Irish language education was merely aspirational. What I would say to you is you're wasting millions and millions of pounds in mismanagement of the education system locally through not tackling the 11 plus. You're wasting millions of pounds in transporting people to distant schools when we've got perfectly good schools in this area, and you're not providing the proper support to the actual streams of education. So you have an awful lot that you can do to fix education in Northern Ireland, and it's not merely somebody else's fault.
I'm happy to say that all of the matters to which you refer are matters for the Department of Education and not for the Education Authority, but I will pass your messages back to my colleagues in the Department. Education Authority exists only to deliver policies, and that's what we do. If I could pick up the point, because I think there is, I did mention earlier, if I might, Chair, that there are issues around transport. These are political, societal, community issues, but there was an exercise done some time ago to analyse the cost of the current transport policy. And the current transport policy says if you live more than 2 miles from your nearest suitable or appropriate primary school or more than 3 miles from your nearest appropriate post-primary school, the state will pay the cost of getting you there. That terminology costs about...
The state will pay the cost of getting you anywhere, not just to the nearest one.
The state will pay the cost of getting you to school. That terminology costs about £35 million a year. So that's the cost, but those are, I would suggest, community, political, societal issues and not issues that the and laid down in legislation and not issues the Education Authority can deal with.
Thank you, Gavin. Councillor Traynor.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Chair, Mr. Boyd, for coming tonight. I suppose I've got two different wee ones, so I'll be very quick with them. The first one is, obviously you're talking about transformation of service, and I suppose when we say transformation of service, this is the second service in the north of Ireland where we're talking about transformation, because we're talking about transformation of the health service as well. But the health service, for many people, probably is a bit more clear-cut, whereas the education service is not going to be as clear-cut. And I suppose, thinking about it, whenever you're talking about transformation of service, are you talking about the reduction then in the number of localised, sort of, as you would say, country schools? Is that going to be, you know, a part of that? Is it talking about amalgamating schools into larger town areas and then transporting young people in? As Councillor Emmett was saying, transport seems to be an issue for the department, and certainly in terms of the cost. And I suppose you have a 10-year plan for an interim strategic document, and the current financial situation, how do you believe that will you be able to deliver on the 10-year interim strategic document, given the financial circumstances that we find ourselves in at the minute? Or is that something that is going to have to be reviewed in the near future to be a bit more realistic? Or can the Education Authority realistically deliver on this plan? And then the last thing is about youth service, which is an area that I would hold quite dear. And I suppose it's recently there has been the move on to the new model for outdoor education. And I'm wondering that as part of the process of that new model, will there be a review of that to make sure that it is providing efficiencies and it's ensuring that the quality of the service hasn't changed? Because I suppose that was one of the great fears for a lot of people, was that moving from onto a new model, there would maybe be a discrepancy in the quality of the service. So is that going to be reviewed? When is it going to be reviewed? Is there a time frame in place for that? So that would be sort of just a few of the points I'd like to raise. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor.
Yes, please. If I take the example of post-primary education, I'm going to suggest to you that young people study better the subjects that they like. We tend to like some things and not like other things. And my experience and what I observe around the place is that we do better in the subjects that we like. Now, we don't all like the same subjects. We have different strengths. But the fact of the matter is you will get a significantly wider range of subject choice in post-primary schools in bigger schools. Some schools offer a very narrow range of choice. Other schools offer a much wider range of choice. I think there's a matter of equity in that. But whatever about the subject choice, and I argue that if young people get to choose subjects that they enjoy, they will actually do better, so they'll have better outcomes. Whatever about the subject choice, one of the things that really shapes us as people is all that extracurricular activity at school, the opportunity to engage in sports or music, other cultural activities, debating, all the rest of it. And the fact of the matter is, in larger institutions, you will get a much wider range of choice and a much wider range of experiences. So there's very strong evidence to suggest that if we coalesce post-primary education around a smaller number of larger schools, we would actually deliver better outcomes and better experiences for young people, and we could do it actually in a more cost-effective way. So it'd be a win-win situation. The truth of the matter is that the average selective school in our system is about twice the size of the average non-selective school. I don't know why that is. It might be an accident of history. But what that means is, on the typical experience of the young person who goes to the non-selective school is much narrower than the experience of the person who goes to the selective school. It is not universally the case, because one of the biggest schools in our system is just on the periphery of this area. It's St. Paul's in Bessbrook, which is, for those of you who know that part of the area, it's a very, very successful school. It's a non-selective school, but it's offering a tremendous range of experience and subject choices to the young people of that area. So there's a model that clearly works. I actually wouldn't apply the same thinking to primary schools, because there's a very real argument that says if you take a primary school out of a community, you take the heart out of the community, and that starts to influence the decisions of young homemakers, young parents, about where they're going to be. So a lot more sensitivity required there. But I'll still argue very strongly that once you get below one class per year group, you're starting to impact on the quality of education for those children. We have about 350 schools in our system which are below the Department of Education sustainability indicators. So there is a major question that we've got to face about that. In terms of the strategic plan, and I actually would link it back to the program for government as well. I think we've got an excellent program for government, which is very aspirational. But what I'm going to say very clearly is we will not be able to deliver on the aspirations set out in the program for government. We will not have the money to do it. The aspirations are great, but we need to decide, are we serious about it? And from a transformational perspective, even if we agreed a new model for education in the morning, it would take us years to get there. It would take us a number of years to get there. We need to be funded to get us from A to B. To pick up your final point in relation to the youth service, there has been a clear political commitment for as long as I've been involved to protect youth service. And so the budget for youth service has actually been protected for the last number of years. The nature of the youth service is changing over the certainly over the time that I've been involved in education, and it looks different, it will feel different, and it'll look different and feel different as the need for youth services changes. We have one of my fun activities of an evening is to drive out around the city and spot the youth workers that we have on the streets, the guys who are the outreach youth workers who are going out and meeting the kids on the corner, rather than waiting for them to come into a youth club. And there's too much distance between me and the door to start talking about outdoor education centres and closures of outdoor education centres in this place. But what I would say is that the reorganisation of the outdoor education centres does not reduce the capacity that's available to the education service. Doesn't reduce the capacity. The fact of the matter is, when we put five education library boards together, the occupancy rate, the activity rate for our outdoor education centres is running at about 35%. So we have about 65% non-utilisation. This was I understand the sensitivities, but it was we're absolutely confident that the provision is correct.
So just to clarify, there will be a review then based on
Sorry, I should have picked that up. There will be a review, because that's part of the program, the process we need to go through here.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Gavin, there's serious concerns with regards to the post-amalgamation of Glasdomin, Ballymartin, and Monadara schools. It seems he's going to close two of the schools and use the other schools to house all the pupils. Minister John O'Dowd proposed that a new school would be built in 2015. And the minister actually said was, the three schools will amalgamate on a new site and a new building to accommodate the 205 pupils. The schools will continue to operate separately until a new site and accommodation has been identified. Could you do an update on that, please? And just on a second point, St Louis and St Clemens amalgamation is going to happen there as well. Will be a special learning unit for the children of Mourne in St Louis and Miss Hams.
I'm sorry, I can't give you a specific answer to those specific questions, but I'm very happy to come back to you with a specific answer because I just don't have the detail. But actually, in both those cases, those are matters in the first instance of the responsibility of the Catholic authorities. So it's the Catholic trustees who are handling CCMS, handling the primary school discussions, and the Catholic trustees handling the discussions in Kilkeel. But I'll talk to Jerry Campbell and happily, and we'll come back to you with an update about that. In relation to the special unit, I understand that there are detailed discussions going on at the minute, just as to, because there's a clear need in the area, and we have to support those children.
Okay, Sean, would you just turn out Jerry Light for me? And sorry, Councillor Marketeer.
Yes, Gavin, welcome here this evening as well. Yes, could I just sort of illustrate to you, you know, what's actually going on out there? You have certainly alluded to it. There's a kind of a gap somewhere in all this, in the sense that, you know, two local schools close to me, Ballyhole Primary School and Carrick Primary School in Bourne. Now, those two schools have been running, you know, over the last 20 years without any deficits, you know. Now, so they are, both those schools are approximately facing figures like 29,000 of a deficit this year coming in, right, which has been offset by the fact that it carried forward a surplus from the previous year. So good management wasn't rewarded. Next year, 156,000 of a deficit. The following year, 334,000. Their principals also give me figures that their school ratio per pupil is going from roughly 1 to 22, you mentioned earlier, to possibly as high as in 3 years' time to 1 to 32. Remedial teaching, the SENs, people in need of special education needs, that their budget is the first to be cut because you can't get rid of teachers, so you get rid of that. So the weakest again is suffering in these schools and the type of these schools. The other issue they asked me to raise with you is the anomalies between similar sized schools with a high number of free school meals who have budgets I have here in front of me with an excess. They can't spend the money. 100,000 of a surplus, come back 13-14, 154,000 14-15, and the latest figure we have would be 304, actually rising surpluses. 404, nearly half a million approaching this year, potentially. We're also looking here at, you know, transport cuts into the schools. The teachers aren't able to attend training to improve their own knowledge and background. Education psychologists have been left out of the schools. Classroom assistants are now known as a luxury. We're going back hundreds of years in this country. Now, I'm sitting listening to you here, and you sort of, you know, I'm not accusing you directly, but I do wonder about boards who sit there in authorities, and I really do wonder about the sincerity, because you talk about solutions, and solutions on one hand, you're saying we're going to have combinations whether to cut the number of schools or else do something about the budgets. But again, I wonder, you know, sitting back, you're saying that will destroy a community. So I'm just trying to think of what is going on in the education authority's head. You know, why do people take on positions when you know really and truly that you're not on a winner? And what would you do about it? You know, from a personal point of view as chief executive, you know, how far are you prepared to go not to tolerate this and not allow this to happen? If you sincerely believe in what you're saying and you believe in education in this country, You know, would you ever consider resigning as a matter, you know, to send out a message there to whoever it is in government? Would you treat it as seriously as that? Because I certainly do. Because we're looking at our future here in this country for our young people who are now becoming competitors in the greater world out there, more and more competitive educationally. And we are falling back. And with people here who are saying, you know, and some of the other counselors alluded to it, wasting money. I know at our school alone, the teachers were laughing at the waste of, I think it was $250,000 on a computer testing system that the teachers didn't want. You know, so like, there's, I know we're all, we can maybe sometimes overly criticise, but, you know, there's a lot of angst out there amongst the teachers and the parents and school board of governors, of which I am one of them, about the way things have been handled and the kind of a hands-up approach, I can do nothing. You know, so I would like to hear really and truly what you propose to do, or where do you think see the solution is in all this? Because I don't think it's good enough.
Okay.
Well, I'm really sorry to disappoint you, but I've tried for the last 2 years to retire. I have been requested by my board and the department and various ministers not to retire, much to the disappointment and annoyance, I have said, Mrs. Boyd. It's an awfully attractive proposition, not to be sitting down here trying to explain this, but for my sins, I've agreed to try to work a way at it. Let me deal with some of the specifics. If I didn't take this enormously seriously, I'd be on a golf course somewhere. I take it incredibly seriously because this really matters. This really matters. Where we, as an authority, have changed our stances up until the autumn time, we made all our commentary inside the tent to the department, to our political masters, and to anybody else who cared to listen. We had a series of 10 engagement events with school principals. We met with, well, we hosted every school principal in the system. We met with most of them. And the message that they came out of that, one of the messages I took out of that most strongly was, we want you to stand up and say publicly what the situation actually is, because our parents don't understand what's going on here. And they're not really listening to what I'm saying. Our parents don't understand. We want you to stand up publicly, and that's what we did. I went out before Christmas, went on to the media. I did it again last week. I'd be going to the Northern Ireland Affairs Committee, which is meeting in Stormont on, that's the Westminster Committee, is meeting in Stormont on Thursday, to give them precisely this message. It's not to justify the situation, it's to publicise the situation. It's not something that a bureaucrat like me normally does. So we take it enormously seriously. There are solutions available to us. You make a comment about the balance of the budgets. I think I probably see the budgets of every individual school in my sleep at night because I read them that regularly. And I can tell you as a matter of fact that the schools that are, and we've got 1,000-odd schools, so there's a range of budget experiences. The schools that are most likely to be in surplus are large primary schools with high levels of social disadvantage, some of them with very significant surpluses. The schools that are most likely to be in deficit are small post-primary schools that are struggling for numbers. We've got a number of post-primary schools this year who will rack up deficits in year of over £250,000, £300,000. The 30 schools that are under most financial pressure in the system will this year incur deficits of £10 million. Now, that's money that is being sucked out of the system and could be used in viable schools, but we're using that money to keep open schools that are unsustainable. We've got to do something about that because it's not in the interest of the pupils who are there, because they're being disadvantaged in terms of their experience. In my experience, it's not in the interest of the people who are teaching there because the experiences aren't great. We've got to do something more about that. We have a sustainable schools policy that says this is the appropriate number for a primary school, this is the appropriate number for a post-primary school. But if you don't meet those targets, we give £27 million out last year to make up your finances. So there are a number of perverse incentives in the system. If we're serious about it, I make the point that it is the position of the Education Authority. We need, as a community, to decide what it is we want out of our education system, and if that's what we want, if we specify what it is, then what are we prepared, how much money are we prepared to put into it? Because otherwise, we've been dishonest we've been dishonest with the community, and we are putting an entirely unfair burden on the professionals in schools and support of those professionals who are trying to do the impossible. And I haven't even mentioned school governors, because they're charged with trying to balance budgets, and in many cases the Archangel Gabriel wouldn't be able to balance the budgets.
Okay, Gavin, thank you for that. Charlie?
Thank you, Chair. I think we might be missing the point here. The fault lies basically with a very callous Tory government, to be quite honest with you. The block grant has been reduced year on year, and the Assembly, when it was fully functioning, were getting a limited amount to divide among the departments. And the two departments that needed it most, health and education, by and large get ring-fence funding, but it's never always enough because of the callous Tory government. That to one side. There's a hypothetical question, Gavin. If, and it had been touched on here with some of the speakers, if due to maybe prudent planning and good management, some schools were able to build up a small surplus, is there some guarantee that that can be protected for them? And another question is, it also has been touched on, recent reports that over 600 schools are in financial crisis as their financial plans were not accepted by the education authority or the department. Is it possible to get a breakdown on those schools, primary and post-primary? Thank you.
First of all, I can't give a guarantee because the money doesn't exist. There's a guarantee for this year that surpluses are available because the money has been made available in the last monitoring round. Education doesn't carry that money. It doesn't sit in a big safe in the Education Authority. So the only guarantee that we can give is historically the money has always become available. But I would be a wee bit worried about next year. And I'd be worried about next year because the money has become available this year because the Department of Finance ran around all departments to see what extra money there was lying about in departments and got money. And it has just allocated some additional money to education. I have a sense when I look at the Department of Finance briefing document that there's no expectation that there will be money lying around departments this time next year. It's the same point. Stuff is really starting to bite. But let's just remind ourselves that schools are given money in a year for the benefit of the children in that year to provide education that year. Of course, we'll always try to look after and keep a wee bit of money by in case there's an emergency. But there never was. The system suggests, the common funding scheme says you can have a wee bit of flexibility, and that might be a surplus of up to 5% or a deficit of up to 5%. Or £75,000, whichever is the greater. Sorry, whichever is the lesser, right? Whichever is the lesser. So actually, when I look at a school and I see one school in the system with maybe a surplus of £500,600, I begin to worry about some of the decision making that happened in years gone by. You know, that's money that was allocated by ministers and the executive in the past to educate those children, not to hold back for something that might be coming down the line. That's serious. So whatever guarantee there was a guarantee that was actually given by Sammy Wilson when he was Minister for Finance, that he would provide the money from the centre. But you're all political folks. You know that one minister can't bind a successor. Right? There's always been goodwill up to this point. Goodwill up to this point is not the same as saying there's a guarantee that money will be available in the future. I believe it will be. I believe there's a political it's a political imperative, but I couldn't give a guarantee, Charlie. Sorry.
Thank you, Gavin. Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Gavin, too, for coming this evening. Just recently I have been in correspondence with a couple of primary schools, and they're both in a similar situation where they have carefully managed their budget over years and haven't gone into a deficit situation. Now, they have actually so carefully managed their budget that they've managed to maintain a surplus. One school, there's about 160 primary school pupils, 7 classes. The teacher there is actually, the principal is actually doubling up her duties. She's teaching 3 days a week and doing principal duties 2 days a week, which seems to me that's really an intolerable situation. She's not been able to devote enough time to her principal duties. And I'm just wondering what you think about that situation. Are the surpluses that they have, are they available, providing their budget plan is in order? The surplus is it accessible? Just those couple of points.
I repeat the point I made earlier, that the surpluses will be available for schools this year. I regret the fact that there has been some misunderstanding or some misinterpretation of the letter that was sent out last week, but we'll correct that. So the surpluses will be available this year. I should have picked up the point that was made at the front earlier. I see a common trend amongst so many schools, particularly so many primary schools, where they might well have a small surplus at the minute, but their three-year projection is taking them into deficit. It's taking them into deficit. And that is the inevitable consequence. That's the figures that I put up on the screen here. That's what they look like when you're in a school. That's the inevitable consequence. And I am really fearful. I hope I said it at the start, but I'm really fearful about the impact that this is having on the folk who work in schools, particularly the reference made. I think you said you were Senko in the school. That's an incredibly challenging job. Incredibly challenging job. But actually what's happening in so many schools is the amount of time that's being made available to Senkos is being reduced, because it's relatively easy to put a line through some of that on a budget. It's an awful lot easier doing that than taking a teacher out of a 7-teacher school, because that has a real impact. But for too many of the primary schools that I'm looking at, the only way that they'll be, if you think about a figure like £50,000, you start going into £50,000 of a deficit. The only way that you can balance those books is by taking out a teacher. And that's when this all starts to make a real impact on the quality of education.
Okay, thank you, Gavin.
The only more difficult job that I can identify in the system beyond the Senko is the teaching principal, the person who's having to carry a class load as well as manage the school. They're actually two completely different jobs, and I see huge amount of stress being felt by those people. My solution, quite simply, would be that if we gathered together pupils in big enough groups, that we should move away from teaching principals, that we should allow people to focus on management issues and on classroom issues, but not to have to spin those two plates at the same time.
Okay. We only have one other councillor that has indicated that he wants to speak. We were supposed to have a presentation from CCMS, and unfortunately they haven't turned up. Now, we're not sure whether they maybe got confused and went to Newry, so, or something has happened, as Liam said, but that is why it looks as though we won't be having a presentation from them. So, Councillor Quinn, sorry, it's been a long day. Councillor Quinn, you seem to be the last person to speak tonight, so would you like to put your comments to Gavin, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Once again, welcome, and it's great to have you here for this presentation. Like Councillor Dorn, I'm going to be a wee bit parochial about the schools in the Mourne area. St. Columbans and St. Louis are not amalgamating. St. Columbans is closing. And it has been told to parents and that in the area that St. Louis will then be an all-ability school. St. Louis is making no provision for any of the support services which you referred to previously. So how does that rate as an all-ability school? We also mentioned the fact that transport being a big cost, if these young people who need these support services then have to be transported out of the area to access these services, that is going to hit the budget up even further. Also, with regard to the primary schools, it has been mentioned that if you take a primary school out of a rural area, you're taking the heart out of the community. In the Lower Mourne area, you're taking three primary schools out in one swoop from a very close-knit community. Would it be possible to re-examine that and see how you can do the least harm to those communities when deciding on which schools to remove? But my final thing is, rather than come back to us as councillors with this information, could yourselves and CCMS organise public meetings and explain this to the parents? Because parents are contacting us as councillors on a daily basis, asking questions, and we can't answer them. And the few pieces that have been put in the press about these school closures, they're done in a language that people cannot understand what's happening. So if you could please share that with CCMS and see if your two organisations could hold two meetings, one about the St. Columba and St. Louis issue and one about the three Lower Mourne primary schools.
The best that I can offer you on this occasion is to take that message back to CCMS, because the issues that you raise are in the first instance all the responsibility of the Catholic authorities, CCMS for the primary schools, and the Catholic trustees for the St. Louis and Columbans issue. I would only get myself into bother if I said anything about it, other than to confirm that our absolute priority is to look after the young people of the area. That should be the first consideration that we always apply. What's in the best interest of the young people? But I'll happily take that back to CCMS.
We can obviously try to make contact with CCMS to find out, you know, what has happened them tomorrow, and on Monday night's meeting I'll come back hopefully with a response or an explanation as to what happened tonight. Councillors, I think that's all the questions that Mr. Boyd can answer for us in the absence of CCMS. So on behalf of all of the councillors, thank you very much for giving up your time. And we'll see you all on Thursday. Thank you, councillors.